Okay. So there's right now only three of us on, and at this time there's only six of us signed up as well. And usually I would want at least 10, and I know that 27 had requested to be in these calls, but thanks to my shoddy marketing and my jet lag, we have a really small intimate group, and I suspect that those other people are going to sign up for another series of support. So the good news for all of you all is that you get me kind of privately. And so this is going to be a really intimate, gorgeous experience just between the five of us, six of us, sorry, over the next month. And we can go deeper just with your individual questions versus having it be diluted by having so many people on the call. So let's get started. I only had one question submitted, and that was by Glenda. Glenda, are you on the call yet? So she's not here, so we can just start wherever you want. And a number of you haven't worked with me very much. One person that signed up has been working with me for years. Jaquetta, are you here? All right, she's not here yet either. Let me just tell you a little bit more about how I operate then before we get started in this first call. This will be similar to a therapy session where we just kind of talk in the beginning and you just tell me what's on your plate. Any questions that you may have, you can either submit in advance or you can submit them just openly during the call. And then we're going to go on an exploration. We're going to use my game called Shift, the game of 10,000 Wisdom, and we're going to do voice dialogue, basically, which several of you experienced for the first time in Bali at AFES. So I find that this teaching tool called the Game of 10,000 Wisdoms is kind of the fast track towards figuring out what's going on in your unconscious mind and getting unstuck from patterns that don't work for you anymore. And so it's the primary teaching tool that I use. I also tell a lot of ancient wisdom stories, use a lot of analogies, throw in the occasional quote. But this is basically a free-for-all for all of us. And, you know, Glenda had a question about loneliness and shame, and we're going to get to that today. And even though that's not your question, it's an interesting subject, loneliness. You know, we've all felt alone at times. Maybe we felt lonely at times. Just speaking to that voice maybe will unlock something going on under your radar that you may not be aware of. Shame certainly is a big voice for us all. I personally have disowned shame. Like, I never feel shame, which is why it's the perfect voice for me to play around with during this call. But anything else that you want to introduce to our time together, you know, the fact that we have such a small group is really, really exciting. We're going to have some fun. It's going to be interesting. And this is a co-creation amongst us all. Does anybody have any questions?
No.
Okay. And what my request will be is if you have background noise, then you mute yourself when you're not in what I call the hot seat. And the hot seat is where I'm facilitating you specifically. And then we're just going to do the voice dialogue just one-on-one, because if I do voice dialogue and all of us are talking, you know, are trying to get my attention at once, then it can get chaotic. So when I'm facilitating the Game of 10,000 Wisdoms, it'll just be a one-on-one, and everybody else I encourage to participate, and then I'll give you some time at the end of the hot seat facilitation for anybody else to ask questions, clarifying questions, or comment, or be facilitated themselves as well. Is there anybody on the call that I haven't facilitated in the voice, in these voices, Shift the Game of 10,000 Wisdoms?
I haven't. This is Tarina.
Okay. All right. Tarina, then, have you read my book?
Yes.
Okay. So you have a general sense of, excuse me, I just drank some water. You have a general sense of the dialogue, though, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Then maybe we're going to start with you, and we're just going to spend a few minutes, and also certainly the folks from AFEST, I'd like to go over the game of 10,000 wisdoms again briefly so that we can all get on the same page. But this game is, look at yourself as a corporation with 10,000 employees. And I'm going to speak to individual employees in your corporation that makes up who you are. And I'm like a business consultant that's being brought in to kind of look at this corporation called Sharina and just see if the corporation could be run better, more smoothly, like what's going on in your undercurrent. So we want to go one voice at a time. And I'm going to ask to speak to one of the employees, one of the 10,000 employees in your corporation. And the rules of the game are, there's two rules. You want to shift physically and become in an instant the employee that I asked to speak to. And then you speak in the first person as that voice. I'm going to call them voice, not employees from now on. And refer to the self or Sharina in the third person. And it's a really simple game. You know, the more simple you can make it, the better. If you try to understand what the voice is, that's a form of resistance. It's a form to not play the game or a way to not play the game. So my only request is that you just be in voice in the most simplistic of ways and then refer to yourself in the third person, and then you're there. Don't try to understand it. Just play the game. All right? And I've just given you guys a huge earful. I'm kind of stalling for time to see if anybody else is going to get on the call. But does anybody have any questions about all that I've outlined, either about shift or about how these calls are going to be conducted?
So I'm assuming in this that there is some type of a privacy clause.
Oh, yeah. And you guys don't know who each other is. Nobody's added any names. You guys are actually spread out all over the world. I'm pretty sure you're not going to run into each other at the grocery store tomorrow, too. And, yes, this is all confidential. Thank you for reminding me to say that. Everybody clear that this is only to be kept within the container of these calls?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Sharina, can we start with you?
Well, why not?
Okay. And I want everybody to do this voice, too. And if somebody wants to be facilitated by me at the end of it, then let me know. I'll ask. And the reason why I want us to all do this voice is everybody that works with me knows that I always start with the voice of the controller. And it's always good to check in with the voice of the controller because it's such a big deal in our lives. So, Sharina, I just want you to shift your body physically. And what that looks like is if you're sitting on your right butt cheek, I just want you to shift to your left butt cheek and become in an instant the voice of the controller. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the controller. Who am I speaking to? And you say the controller.
Okay. The controller.
Okay. So hopefully everybody is in the voice of the controller. But I'm just going to put you in the hot seat. So you're the voice of the controller. How big of a role do you play in Sharina's life?
Big.
Did you say thick?
No, big.
Big, okay. So you play a big role in Sharina's life, and there's a reason why I'm asking to speak to you first. Why do you think that is?
Probably because it can taint. I guess you said first person. I can taint the other voices.
Right. You play a big role in how the other voices show up, whether I can even play the game with her. I find that you're in charge of trying to control thoughts, controlling feelings, controlling emotions, controlling whether she even gets on this call or not. You're just a big deal. And I want to honor you first on this, our first phone call of the month together, by just inviting you into the process. So as the controller, can you tell me, why did you have Sharina sign up for the support package?
For me, for her, it's to learn further about becoming intimate with fear, I guess is the best way of putting it.
So I, as the controller, I want to help her have a better relationship with fear. And thus also, as a controller, you get to have a better relationship with fear. So you're invited along in this process too. How do you typically, as the voice of the controller, handle fear?
Probably logically. I'll analyze it to death.
Okay. So everybody else, if you could mute yourself. There isn't background noise. All right. So as the voice of the controller, you tend to analyze fear.
Mm-hmm.
Like, give me an example.
What's an example? If something comes up, I will analyze how great the risk is and then determine whether it's worth it as the voice of a controller. The more
right.
out
There's
of control,
the whole...
Yeah. Go ahead.
Sorry, I interrupted. You go ahead.
The more out of control my life feels, the more controlling I become. Or the more
okay.
out of control Tarina's life feels, the more controlling I become.
Okay. And my guess is that other people can relate to that too. Like the more out of control her life feels, the more she kind of looks to me to get it back under control. And one way that you can get emotions under control is try to understand them. And in our culture, emotional intelligence is seen as our ability to understand and control our emotions. Like, you're a big part of that process. And understand the emotions as well, you know, make sense of them, and then make a decision, like no risk, no reward, right? Okay, maybe sometimes it's warranted to take a risk which involves fear, but other times it's like, yeah, maybe not so much today. So this is how our game works. And you're the voice of the controller. There's a voice called fear. There's a voice called sadness. There's a voice called anger. There's a voice called shame, guilt, joy, love, happiness, and on and on and on. And as the voice of the controller, and this is the last question I'll ask you before we move on, what role do you play in managing these other 9,999 voices in this corporation called Tarina?
The controller is probably the CEO. As the controller, that's probably my CEO.
Okay. So what you can say is I, the controller, I'm probably her CEO.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
With a close second anxiety.
Okay. Close second anxiety. Got it. Well, you come to the right place. Let me open up the floor to see if anybody else as the voice of the controller would like to be facilitated and be in the hot seat with me right now. Is there anybody else?
I'm happy to go in if you like.
Okay. So who am I speaking to?
Matthew.
Okay. Allow me please to speak to the voice of the controller. Who am I speaking to?
You're speaking to the voice of the controller of Matthew.
Okay. So can you control Matthew?
We can try.
Interesting. Let me add this to the question. What is Matthew? Who is Matthew, if not you? There's a huge question, huh?
The sum of all of the parts, I guess.
Yeah, that's a great answer. Some of all the parts. So you're a part of his life, and you have a huge impact on his life. And without you, he would be out of control, right? You're a big deal. How big of a deal are you in Matthew's life?
For a very long time, the controller has been responsible.
Hold on. Say it
for...
as I. Say it I, because it's more powerful, right?
I have been responsible for a lot of Matthew's success and potentially a lot of Matthew's misery.
Every voice has a great wisdom and a great delusion. and we can see very clearly what your wisdom is. I mean, without you, he'd be out of control. But how can you also hold the self back? This is a question that hopefully we can all answer just in our own minds, but I'd like to hear it from you. How do you hold Matthew back? How do you cause problems for Matthew?
I cause problems. The controller causes problems for Matthew, or I cause.
Hold on, I'm gonna stop you. Yeah, there you go.
I cause problems for Matthew by impacting my perspective of the world onto all of the other employees.
I work with a lot of skiers, and you'd never hear this from a professional skier, but you'd hear this from a recreational skier. They all say, oh, I want to be able to ski more in control, which is on you. And I think that a lot of people would say that just about their life in general. Like, I'd like to be more in control of my life. But certainly in skiing, you know, it's not as interesting or fun. You're not going to really improve as an athlete that much if it's all about control. You know, like the athletes who win gold medals in the Olympics in the downhill, like, of the pie chart of all the voices that are there that day when they win the gold medal, like, you as the controller are a tiny little sliver, like less than 1%. You know, and there's all these other voices, and certainly the voice of out of control is in there, right? And so there's definitely a belief that, you know, if you could just get everything under control, then the self could be who he or she wants to be. But there's a downside to that, because it's actually considered a huge insult to be called a control freak or a controlling person. Why is that? It's because what gets lost if you're the CEO or you're running the ship, and how much pressure and weight is on your shoulders as a controller if that's the self's goal. So there's definitely a shadow with you, much like there's a shadow with any voice.
Mm. Yeah, I can see that.
Why are we starting these four series of phone calls by speaking to you first? I asked Tarina, now I'm asking you, why is it important that we start with you?
The controller is probably the serial pest that gets involved in everything, so we have to have a chat to him first.
Right, and notice you've fallen out of voice. So it's really important that we notice that. And how I can tell if someone's in voice.
I'm a control freak, and I probably need to be told first for everyone else to have a voice, I guess.
Right. But we also want to invite you into the process as well and honor you by giving you this kind of first moment of glory. And I find that you work best if you have a plan, like you have something that you can focus on. So I'm wondering, and I'm asking everybody, you know, all y'all who are the controller, would you consider just keeping quiet the other 9,999 voices that I don't ask to speak to, and just allow me clear access to specific voices like the voice of fear? I know Trina wants to address anxiety, which is fear recirculating, trapped in the system. That can be your job as a controller. How's that sound? Just keeping the other voices quiet, especially the voice of the one who's trying to understand who these voices are. Would you do that?
Yeah, the controller could do that. The controller could even have a job if he feels like having a job, and instead of pushing the other voices down, he could still honour his ability to control, but in fact do it in reverse and control the other voices, have a voice, so ensure that they are all heard.
Perfect.
I, as the controller, will ensure all the other voices are heard, so I still feel like I'm I have a purpose, I guess, rather than shutting up, so to speak.
Right. Okay. And here's one last thing I want to say. The reason why it's important to speak in the first person is this. Like, imagine if somebody came up to let's actually kind of move out of this and let me explain this from a different reality. So allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the self again. So who am I speaking to? And you're in the hot seat, so just say Matthew.
Matthew.
All right. So everybody's Matthew. Just back to being yourself, right? We're going to just open up the field right now. The reason why it's important that you refer to yourself as I in the first person is this. Imagine if somebody came up to me, I'm Kristen, right, at a party and said, hey, Kristen, how are you doing today? And I said, oh, the Kristen is doing well. That would be weird, right? It tells me that somebody else is speaking on that voice's behalf. The other thing is, if another voice, like say Matthew, you're speaking on behalf of the controller, you're not going to get it right. Like if somebody comes up to Kristen and says, hey, Kristen, how are you doing today? And Kirk were to say, oh, she's doing well. You know, he doesn't know. He doesn't know how I'm doing. And so if some other voice speaks on the controller's behalf, or some other voice like you, Matthew, speak on fear's behalf, you're not going to get it right. You're going to be kind of grasping for answers and trying to figure some stuff out. Like, we want fear to answer for fear. We want sadness to answer for sadness. We want the controller to answer for the controller. And so that's why it's important to start your sentences with the word I, so that we can play this game thoroughly all the way and have a bird's eye view of who the habitual self actually is, which is why this game works so well. So I'll catch it, though. But if you fall out of voice, that's not that you're playing the game wrong. It's just the noticing is the most important part. And sometimes the inability to stay in voice is the takeaway, you know, the insight, the interesting point that we get out of this game, not just being in the voice itself. Do you follow?
What did you mean by yes. habitual self?
Well, right now I'm speaking to the habitual self. Whether we realize it or not, and I love that you asked that, is we're playing this game all the time. Like, for example, I'm the habitual Kristen self. I'm also in the voice of the facilitator. I'm also in the voice of the one in charge, you know, that kind of thing, which is a habitual pattern for me when I'm doing conference calls, right? So it goes back to the question. I asked the controller, who is the self? And I introduced that big, big question early on, and Matthew's controller said, oh, well, it's an amalgamation of all the 10,000 voices. In many ways, though, who we are is just a concept. And in the context of this game, a concept that is kind of the product that gets created by these 10,000 voices running around in our unconscious mind, creating this creature, this person, this habitual self that is called Matthew, Tammy, Jaquetta, and on and on. So do you have any more questions about that? Because it's a really interesting concept.
I think it'll take me a minute to process that.
Right. Why don't we do this? And who was that speaking?
Tarina.
All right, Tarina, you're back in the hot seat, and let's all play along again. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the habitual self. Or, if you prefer, we could call you the creature of habit. Who am I speaking to?
That would be better, the creature of habit.
Okay. So you're the voice of the creature of habit. And here's an important question. Are you Tarina? Is Tarina you?
No. I am not Tarina, and Tarina is not me.
Right. But notice the impact that you have on how she shows up on a call like this, how she shows up in the world, how she spends her life.
True. Yes.
Yeah, it's huge, right? You have a huge impact. And oftentimes the self is a creature of habit, you know, a series of long established beliefs, stories, preconceived notions about who he or she is, kind of churning the same habits over and over again. It's almost like we become like robots that are going around and reacting and talking the same way and acting the same way and all of that. And that's often what we are when we don't have a consciousness practice. But once we have a consciousness practice, which we're using this game to have that consciousness practice, then all of a sudden we can start to see things. We can start to see that, oh, I'm the creature of habit. I'm not the self. The self is not me. And with that, it becomes a very liberating opportunity to realize that the self is actually free from habits. It's your job to be a creature of habit, not hers.
When you say your, it's Tarina.
So you're the voice of, yeah, who am I speaking to?
This is Tarina.
Okay. So notice you've fallen out of voice.
No. I was trying to follow your thought when you say, you said yours and hers, and I wanted to make sure I was hearing that correctly.
Right. So whenever I ask to speak to a voice, just know that we're going to stay in that voice until I ask to speak to another voice. And we won't actually go back to speaking to Tarina or Glenda or Tammy until I ask to speak to that voice. So allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the creature of habit again.
Okay.
Who am I speaking to?
The creature of habit.
Right. And so I asked, are you Tarina? Is Tarina you? And you said, no.
Correct.
And then the speech that I gave was for you.
Was for the creature.
Kind of,
for me as
yeah.
the creature of habit. Got it.
Right.
And the
does anybody else want to...
The conscious
go ahead.
Awareness... The conscious awareness is for the creature of habit, for me to see
right.
that and
it's
how
it's your job,
Tarina.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's your job to be a creature of habit. Tarina isn't a creature of habit. That's your job. So what does that mean for her? Like she can be anything she wants to.
Right. I was going to say she's free of me.
Right. In this moment, she is. But then, you know, after the call, go unconscious again, and then back to being robots, which is just part of our birthright, you know, human beings, right? But just notice the considerable role that you play in her life. Are you on the board of directors? Are you, maybe you're the CEO. I don't know.
I could fight with a controller.
Okay.
It could be a three-way.
Okay. Does anybody else want to speak as the creature of habit right now? All right. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the self again. And so we're back to Tarina, Glenda, Jaquetta. Who am I speaking to?
This is Tarina.
Okay. All right, now that we've established this, we have some questions. I want to bring up Glenda's question. Glenda, are you on the call?
Yes, I am.
Okay. You feel like being in the hot seat?
Yes, and I got here a little late, so I'm trying, and I haven't done this for a while, so I'm just trying to get in the in the spirit of it all.
Okay. Do you want to just bookmark this maybe till next week, or do you want to wait a few minutes?
Depends what we're doing.
So what I was doing is, because there's a few people on the call that haven't had either any experience or much experience with Shift the Game of 10,000 Wisdoms. So we just had the voice of the controller and then the voice of mm-hmm. the creature of habit. And I was thinking of getting into some of the shadow voices next with your help.
Okay, I can do it. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to, anybody that's on the call that has a question that you want to introduce to the call tonight, you will have time, but for just a little bit, whatever question gets submitted in advance to me via email is what I'll go to first in these calls. And then with the time that we have left over, we'll kind of open the floor to just introducing any other questions. So in the future for the next three calls, if you want to submit a question in advance, please do, and then you'll get a poll position. But I'm not going to go into details on the questions that get submitted, but I am going to bring up the voices, of course. Glenda had a question about absolute loneliness and shame. And the word absolute is very interesting. You know, anytime you put the word absolute before a voice, it magnifies it, obviously. And when I facilitate this dialogue, I can put a word, like let's just take the word loneliness, right, because that's on our table here. I could facilitate immature loneliness. I could facilitate mature loneliness. I could facilitate infinite loneliness, you know, to incorporate and include all the loneliness on the planet and beyond. I could do divine loneliness and make it a very holy voice. I could do masculine, did I already say this, and feminine loneliness, which will show up very, very different. The shadow of loneliness, loneliness in the basement, owned and honored loneliness. So whenever you put a word, a defining word in front of a voice, you know, like masculine fear, feminine fear, irrational fear, rational fear, like it changes the nature of the voice. So, Glenda, when you said absolute loneliness, tell me why you put the word absolute beforehand.
It was like a total absolute loneliness. I don't know how to explain it. It's like
I'm going to die alone.
Yeah, kind of thing, yes.
Okay. Would you rather go with loneliness or would you rather go with shame right now, which feels stronger for you?
They're both pretty big.
Let's go with loneliness.
I don't know which one. I don't know which one is stronger either.
All right, so everybody, let's play along. But Glenda, you're going to be in the hot seat. Mm-hmm. So allow me, please, to speak to the voice. We'll just call it loneliness for now. Who am I speaking to?
Loneliness.
And notice if you're showing up as a feeling in your body, or if you're showing up as thoughts, or both, maybe. Notice what kind of physical posture you've just taken on as the voice of loneliness. For me, I'm kind of leaning forward, protecting my heart, and I'm kind of slouching over. My eyes are closed. My brow is furrowed. How are you showing up physically as the voice of loneliness?
Yeah, it's a little bit similar. I think for me, but maybe that's a different one because it just comes to me like feeling lost.
Okay, I feel like is lost the more accurate word because there's a difference between the voice of loneliness and the voice of loss. So which has more heat for you?
No, let's keep with the voice of loneliness. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And notice you're different from aloneness. Can you feel the difference between you and aloneness? You know, you're a whole nother clique. I guess darker, for lack of a better word, or just painful. You know, you're a painful voice for the self, aren't you? Mm-hmm. You show up as emotional pain or physical pain, or what kind of pain do you feel as loneliness? Tell me anything about you.
Everything. Yeah, it's physical, it's emotional.
Right. So did you just say that it's more emotional than physical?
It's both.
Right. I feel mostly emotional pain, but I also, it's like my head hurts as a voice of loneliness. So you can manifest physically as well, especially if the self doesn't want to feel her emotions. Are you in the basement? Does she want nothing to do with you? Or are you kind of in a more honored position than that?
No. I'm definitely in the basement. She's very, very scared of me.
Okay. Because sometimes you can become a companion to people. It's like, okay, they may not have a person in their life, but at least they have you. But you're in the basement.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And everybody go there. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of you, loneliness, in the basement. So it's still you. But you just notice that you're down there in the dark with no food, no water, no love, no sunshine. So who am I speaking to?
The voice of loneliness in the basement.
Okay. Now how do you feel physically?
Worse, for sure.
Right. Why worse? Because she won't deal with you, she won't talk to you, she won't... spend time with you.
It's like, very intense. Yeah.
And it's not your job to be joyful, right? It's your job to be lonely. And now you're in the basement and you feel even more lonely, right?
Yes.
Right. And I mentioned that you can be a companion for people, but she won't even have you be a companion for her.
No, why the self, like, she used to enjoy me a lot when she was a girl, a teenager. Like, I was her favorite friend. And she felt it was better to be with me than being with company. But that changed completely, yeah.
It's like you guys had a special friendship. What's changed?
All the experiences she's had since she got married, I guess.
She thought that she could get married and then he would be her companion, not you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now that she's not with him anymore, you're back, and she's not enjoying you. She's putting you in the basement.
Well, I've actually always been there. It was just there. She felt me a lot more because then she had somebody, but she didn't really have anybody at the same time. So that was actually, it was harder for her. So it was like,
okay. Why are you, I mean, besides the obvious, because she's alone again. She sees you as a problem. Or maybe not. I mean, how does she see you right now?
Yeah, a threat, for sure.
Okay. I mean, of course you're going to come back. It didn't work out. And with a guy. And so you're coming back and you're here to, I don't know, comfort her, maybe? Why are you here? What do you have to offer her?
To get herself to know herself better.
Is it working?
At this point in her life, she's really scared to, I don't know if she even knows. She's in a transformation period, so it's really hard for her because like she's with someone right now, and he and that person will shape some aspects of her which are very positive, but then he goes away, and then he comes back, and then he goes away because of his job. And so it just reminds her of that absolute loneliness, you know, that she doesn't want to experience. And even though she's having a different new life,
that yo-yo thing reminds. It's like it's so obvious that you're here. As soon as he leaves, boom, you're here.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a yo-yo, and so she's in this relationship with this guy to not have you in her life, but the second he leaves, boom, you're back. Is she seeing this guy to not have to deal with you?
And what's the question again?
Is she seeing this guy to not have to deal with you?
No. She's with him for the experience, because if she would have been with anyone for not having me, this would be the complete wrong person. Like, I feel this is how she gets to work with me.
Oh, okay. So it's an interesting dance. You know, you, basement, him, you know, back and forth. What advice do you have to give to her regarding you?
To love herself.
Part of loving herself is loving you.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, it's the voice of loneliness. You know, you're never not going to be lonely, because that's your job. Your job is to be lonely, right? But if she gave you some love, then maybe you wouldn't be so traumatized, I guess, by being locked in the basement. Let's actually take you out of the basement right now and just see what happens. Just notice how you feel down here in the basement. And now allow me, please, to speak to the voice of you, loneliness, with her giving you some love. Who am I speaking to?
Loneliness with her giving me some love.
Okay. Just spend a moment, like 15 seconds of silence. Just giving you some love. Now, how do you feel physically?
Much better. Yeah, I feel like we... I feel like she can be more of who she really is with me.
Yeah.
She just accepts that I'm not that bad.
You know, for some people, and I don't know if it's the same for Glenda, but they spend most of their life just doing so many different actions and making so many choices specifically to not feel you, to not deal with you, to kind of block you out, mute you, put you in the basement. Just look at humanity. And what does humanity do? What kind of decisions do they make to not have to deal with you?
A lot of wrong decisions.
Yeah. And what does the self do? What does humanity do because you're disowned and locked in the basement and it's profound. The impact.
Oh, it just comes
it's not,
to me. Yeah.
Right?
It just
it's
comes
like
to me that people feel like with me, there is a lack of something. But what they don't realize is with me, there's going to be a adding of something. But...
Right.
It's to be discovered, right? It's to be of your own creation, of your own soul. But I don't understand what is the fear, because there's a fear there, which it's a different voice.
Right. And, you know, if you didn't exist, then togetherness wouldn't be as profound. You know, we really need contrast in the human experience. Like, look at just the gorgeous opposite of you, and only by knowing profound experience of you can they know a profound experience of togetherness. And, I mean, when we really start to dissect any voice that is considered just horrible, soul-sucking, you know, and you give it some love, all of a sudden the wisdom and the opportunity becomes very revealed. So we can't really even be in flow with our lives unless you're part of that process, you know, and flow with all of the human experience.
Well, that's true. So now,
at least in this moment, we're inviting you in for this moment. Is there anything else that you'd like to say as the voice of loneliness that has been owned and appreciated, loved?
Well, maybe to invite her to, next time she thinks about me, to think more about as mature loneliness, that every time he's going to go away, that I'm actually mature, that she's going to be okay with me, that, you know, we're going to learn together, and she's going to appreciate me more, because she's going to learn more about herself, so it's okay.
And whenever there's a difficult breakup that results in you, the longer that somebody can stay just sitting with you, the more insights the self can glean, the more that the self is going to be able to learn from what just happened in the last relationship. You know, there's so many people that just as a way to avoid you just jump into a new relationship 2 seconds later, or jump into a relationship in order to end the last relationship. They never get to have an experience of you, and thus they never get to have the moving feeling that comes from you, and never get to have the insights. Like you said so well, it's like I'm here to teach her.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a history with her. And so she probably has a more intimate, considerate relationship with you than most people have with you. And some people spend their whole lives just trying to avoid you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Well, I just would really like her if she would welcome me back the way that she did, you know, when she was younger. So I think she would really enjoy me now that she has learned so much more in her life. It would actually be really enjoyable. It wouldn't be because
totally
before she was, yeah, before she was running away from people, and she searched for me because she didn't trust anyone, so she was more comfortable with me. But now she can come back to me as in understanding who she really is, so she can just, you know, have that balance and.
And her willingness to embrace you has also given her the power to leave a bad relationship, you know, and come back to you as a familiar, comforting voice that she was familiar with when she was in high school. So, I mean, that alone is, you know, helped her get out of a bad relationship. So, good for the two of you. All right, I'm going to open up the field to everybody else, too. If there's anybody that would like to explore this voice personally as well, say something now. And if not, then we can move on and introduce a new question to the call. Or if anybody has any clarifying questions, just know that the stage is available for anybody.
I guess I would like to speak for a little bit. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So I'm finding myself resisting the game in a way because the way I view my CEO, self, third party, it's me as a human being in this lifetime as one existence, as one person. And so trying to separate the two into this person putting in the basement and me, it's still my reality. Through my fear, through depression, through anxiety, through anger, through my happiness, it's one. It's one human being living in this existence. So I'm finding myself resisting in this game of separating the character. So maybe that's my work and that's my mirror. But it's accepting all of me in all parts and navigating through each element and finding reasoning behind why I have anger at times, why I let other people affect my field, why I feel loneliness, but it's still a part of me as one unit.
Right. Well, let me address a couple of things. First of all, how old are you?
How old am I? 34.
Yeah, 34. All right, so imagine for 34 years, I think I brought this up in our class, but you put $1 a day into a jar. You know, you'd have a lot of money at this point. And you're very, very invested in that big pile of money you have in that jar, right? So to get you to play this game can often feel like throwing out that jar of money, throwing out that investment of who you, how you see yourself, who you believe yourself to be. And it can be a difficult thing for a lot of people to do. The other thing is this is not a philosophy. It's not a, there's some knocking. Is that with you or is that somebody else? If whoever that is, you can mute it. It sounds like somebody's hammering. Okay.
Oh, So
this is not a philosophy. This is not a, you know, this game comes from a Zen background. Like, you know, it starts with, Helen Sidderstone creating voice dialogue, I think in the 60s, it's a psychiatrist trick where you ask to speak different kind of parts of who you are. And then it was adopted by my teacher, Genpo Roshi, a very famous Zen master who incorporated transcendent states of being. And the bottom line is this is a game. This is not a way of seeing the world. This is not a Buddhist thing. It's not a Zen thing even. It's just a game, and you can either play it or don't play it. It's considered let's bring in Ken Wilber. I don't know if you guys all know who Ken Wilber is, but he's a great spiritual artist, and he's Deepak Chopra's teacher, and he's so famous that he was depicted on Family Guy and South Park, right? He says that this game, my version of it is called Shift the Game of 10,000 Wisdoms, is the most important teaching tool in the history of the world ever invented to take people into a consciousness practice where they can see their lives from a bird's eye view and also experience different forms of reality or consciousness that would otherwise not be available to them unless they meditated in a monastery for 40 years. So you don't have to play the game. Oftentimes, just noticing that you won't play the game can be a huge takeaway, like you were saying. But you don't have to, like, throw out that jar of money, except for during the hour that we talk on the phone once a week. And then you can go back to getting that jar of money back in your life and seeing your life however you want. So I'm just suggesting that for our time together, you know, you just temporarily halt that belief and play the game or don't play the game, but at least notice. And
I'm trying to play the game. I'm trying to follow the game, and I understand, but I'm willing as a human to throw out the money. I'm willing to throw out everything because I want to understand self, my dynamics of myself.
Right.
So, right. And when I'm talking in third party, I feel like I'm actually rejecting myself because when I have a conflict with another human being, they don't see myself as, oh, that's just her gremlin talking. She needs to throw it in the basement. I mean, when we navigate through life with other people, they see one person. And it's up to us as individuals to understand what part of ourself we show. So I am trying to play the game and follow the game.
Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's trying to play the game.
Okay.
And why do we just laugh? Who am I speaking to, by the way?
Cammie.
Well, are you the voice of Cammie, or are you the voice of the one who's trying to play the game?
I'm the voice of the one trying to play the game this moment.
Okay. So I want you to just be you. And why did we chuckle when I asked to speak to you?
Because I had to go in my mind of think of, well, actually what person is thinking of me, because I'm trying to separate in my mind this demon, this gremlin, my pure self. What self is me? What self I am? And it's complicated to me. Because
okay.
I'm trying to
allow
separate
me, please,
everything in my head. So when you asked, I
allow
had
me,
a giggle. I had to think.
Right. Okay. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of complicated. Who am I speaking to?
You're speaking to the voice of complicated.
All right, so do your thing. You have 5 seconds. Figure it out. Okay, and now allow me, please, to speak to the voice of simple. Who am I speaking to?
Speaking to the voice of simple.
Okay. You have 5 seconds to do your thing. Okay, now allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's trying to figure it all out. Who am I speaking to?
Speaking to the voice for the one who's trying to figure it all out.
Okay. Are you showing up in a complicated or in a simple way?
At this moment, I feel like I'm showing up in a complicated way.
Okay. So the noticing is the only thing that's important. This game can become very, very complicated if we try to figure it out. It's like when I facilitate, I'll be like, okay, allow me, please, to speak to the voice of this. For me, because I keep it simple, it's like saying, hey, you know, walk across that room. And then when somebody says, well, do I start with my left foot or my right foot? You know, should I move my hips? Should I swing my arms? What am I supposed to be thinking about while I do this? What exactly are you asking me to do, really? You know, we can make this game really, really complicated super fast if we try to figure it out or try to come up with any kind of insight, like what does this mean about me, and introduce, you know, and maybe I was wrong in introducing this big question, like who is the self, so early on in our time together, because it complicates things, right? I kind of want to just have that question in the back of our minds just itching away, like, you know, but let's just kind of drop that. Let's make it as simple as possible, right? And when I ask to speak to a voice, make it as simple as just walking across the room. Do you think that's possible?
Well, yes, but for me, I'm here because I'm trying to figure myself out and be the best version of myself. So when I'm asked what voice am I talking to or think about it, in my mind it adds complex. It's complex to think about,
right?
Because I'm figuring it out. That's why I'm here.
Well, how do you
– trying to navigate through all of this.
Okay. How do you eat an elephant? Have you ever heard that?
No. What?
One bite at a time. So how does this game serve us? How do you kind of use this game or this way of looking at our lives to kind of figure out who I am and how to be my best self and all of that? Well, you got to do one bite at a time. And that's a way to simplify it and kind of take the load off and And when we do that, and what that looks like with this game is I just ask to speak to a voice, like loneliness, and we just spend a little time investigating, like, what's going on there. And this is how, drop by drop by drop, we become a mighty river. I mean, I have a million analogies, right? So, you know, we just got to take it one bite at a time, one drop at a time. Otherwise, it's going to get really complicated, and you're going to be in your head the whole time that I'm facilitating you, trying to figure out, you know, because think about the enormity of life, the universe, everything, Tammie's place in life, Tammy's place in life relative to everybody else's, it's like, it's overwhelming. So the more we can just simplify it, just go one click at a time, I think you're going to get more out of this. Are you willing to do that?
Yes, definitely.
Great.
That's why I'm here.
Okay. Any other questions?
Not at the moment.
Okay. So we're at the hour, and we can keep going. If somebody has a burning question for this week, you know, let's spend another 10 minutes or so. If not, then we can reconvene a week from now, and you could submit questions via email. But is there anything else that we want to look at this week?
So this is Tarina, and in your book, I was able to very well easily follow it until I got to about the last quarter of the book. And then I must have lost something in the context. Can you, if it's appropriate, explain that, what I may have lost?
Okay, where did I lose you in the book?
Basically kind of like you deal with this and then you were talking about it, and then it gets even bigger, and then it gets even bigger. Like, and you're never actually ever really done with it. Is what I was trying to understand. I'd have to go back and highlight my book, but.
Well, take my own life, for example. You know, I just came back from A-Fest in Bali, and some of the people that are on this call I met there. Hi, guys. And I had to give a speech there. And AFEST is a big deal. Mind Valley is a big deal. I don't have a lot of experience giving speeches. I have a lot of experience facilitating, but getting in front of an audience and stage and walking around, like, that's out of my wheelhouse. I don't know how to write a speech. You know, it was a lot, and it was a very scary experience for me. And I wrote a book on how to deal with fear, and I'm lecturing on fear and anxiety, and I'm like, you know, really scared. And I've had to give a lot of speeches in the last year and a half since my book came out, and it really doesn't get any easier. It's not like you start to have an intimate relationship with fear and then all of a sudden you feel better. You know, my book came out just as menopause was kicking in. My husband quit his job to help me with my work, you know, and that caused a whole host of problems between the two of us. And, you know, here I am traveling the world lecturing about fear and anxiety, and I've never felt more fear and anxiety in my entire life. And I used to make a living risking my life in the mountains, right? So the reason why I had that in the book is because, you know, I didn't want to write a book that just said, oh, you know, you start doing this, you start having an intimate relationship with fear, and then all of a sudden it just feels like excitement and wisdom and motivation and all that, because it's just, I didn't want to make claims that aren't true. You know, we at our core are fearful lizard brain creatures. You know, that's who we are at our very core, and we're not going to get past that anytime soon. And so I have to keep coming back again and again and again to just having a fear practice, dealing with my fear in an honest way, and being scared shitless. Like, I'm trying to do something really, really big here, which is challenge and change the way existing norms are around fear, you know, worldwide. It's huge. And what I'm saying is that it doesn't end, you know. It's kind of like, are you married?
Yes.
Do you have kids?
Yes.
Okay. So if you get along great with your husband or with your kids today, does that mean you're going to get along great with them tomorrow?
Higher probability.
Right, higher probability, exactly. You know, I take steps every single day to not only bring my A game to my relationship with my husband, but I also try to bring my A game to my relationship with fear every day. And it's just an ongoing, lifelong effort. And if you drop your guard, right, you might still be okay for a while but then slowly things start to disintegrate. You know what I mean? Like whatever you put into a relationship, you get out of the relationship. It's the same with human beings. It's the same with fear. And so I know, Trina, you have anxiety, and we didn't get to address that in this call. Submit a question about that next week, and let's address it then. But, you know, that how much anxiety you have in your life is definitely related to what kind of relationship you have with fear. And fear is with us every moment of every single day in nearly every interaction we have, and so you have to take steps. You know, imagine if you were with your husband 24/7, right?
Like you have not a good plan, but go ahead.
Right, right. But and we can get away from our husband, we can get away from our children, but we can't get away from fear. And so that's why I consider it the most important relationship of our life, because it's a relationship that we have with ourselves at our deepest, deepest core. And that relationship is so buried underneath layers and layers and layers of habitual patterns and investments and who we believe ourselves to be and on and on. It's like we gotta kind of dig through the layers always and forever and make sure that it's the healthiest relationship possible. And that's what these calls are about. Does that answer your question?
I think so.
Okay. And if it doesn't and something else pops up, then send me an email and we'll address it next week.
Okay.
Is there anything else from anyone?
Do you address fear in the same way when you're about to jump off a cliff with your skis, or as an example, the thought of divorcing your husband, or like fear comes in so many different aspects?
Right.
So I see fear as a professional athlete. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And make no mistake, I don't jump off cliffs anymore. But if I did, and I wish I had The Art of Fear. I wish I had that book to give myself when I was younger, because then it would have saved me a lot of hassle, right? Less, fewer injuries, you know, better chance of survival, all of that. What I do with the fear, if I were in a situation like that, and I can, you know, when I was speaking at AFAS, and we'll finish with this, not everybody that's on the call knows about my 4-step Art of Fear method, but I will send it out. And it's about a 1.5 page document. And, Trina, I know that you have read the book, but this is not in the book spelled out in such a succinct way. So this is something that I've come up with since the book. It's in the book, but it's all kind of all over the place. So this is more succinct. The morning of my talk in Bali, I sat by myself and I closed my eyes and I first acknowledged it's normal and natural for me to feel anxiety about a speech. You know, I have more familiarity with jumping off cliffs than giving a speech, you know, and it's no less scary. So acknowledging it's normal and natural and not a sign of personal weakness is huge. I think it's one of the most important steps. The second is I identified what I felt, which was nervous, which is another name for fear. And I felt it in my chest and in my throat and in my head, and it was pretty strong, probably a level 10. And then the third step is I noticed if I was resisting it in any way, because that leads to a whole host of suffering. And I wasn't. And I was really proud of myself for not resisting it, because, you know, otherwise, what a chump, right? Like, I teach this stuff, and sometimes I resist it, and other times I don't, but I wasn't resisting it that morning. And then I spent the fourth step just feeling my nervousness, and I noticed the energy of it. And it was an intimate experience I had with my nervousness, and it stayed. It didn't go down, because it's just so far out of my comfort zone to give a speech that, you know, I had a client who was a airline pilot learning how to fly and about to go up for the first time on her own. And she said, well, the nervousness stayed with me for the entire flight, the first flight she ever did without her instructor. And I said, well, it should, right? Because you're not on the ground yet. So fear comes into, through, and out of our system in 10 to 90 seconds. You know, if a bear scares us and then the bear's gone, right? If you're in flow with it, it'll be gone very quickly. But so long as you're still doing the scary thing, then it's going to stay with you for the duration of the scary thing. And so I felt that anxiety. It didn't dissipate at all straight through until after the speech was over. But I was merging with it, and so it wasn't as much suffering as it had would have been if I had been resisting it. So that's kind of a practical application. Do you have any questions?
So one of the things that I was wondering is there a distinct difference between the physical fear that can affect the physical body, and fear that affects the emotional or mental body?
Fear is just fear. It's very, very simple. It's just a sensation of discomfort in your body. However you treat it or deal with it determines how it shows up for you. It could show up in your body as a physical sensation. It could show up in your mind as thoughts, like racing thoughts. It could show up as a phobia or as OCD. If it's in your mind or a phobia or OCD, that's a clear sign that you've been locking fear in the basement and it's now hijacked your mind. And the more you can practice this, the more you'll just start to realize it's just a feeling in our body. And maybe that's something that we can look at next if somebody wants to submit a question about that. But the
I don't
more
think
you can
I explained that well. And my question was when you're looking at a physical effect, like if you're, okay, jumping off a cliff.
Give me an example. Like, yeah.
Okay, I'll give you the example of jumping off a cliff, right, and the physical fear mm-hmm. of falling versus making a poor decision that affects your life, which would be a mental fear.
Oh, I see. Like, okay, there's the fear
bungee
of jumping off the cliff.
Versus, right, bungee jumping versus, you know, making a decision that's going to affect the direction of your life.
Like jumping out of an airplane
earlier.
Without a parachute. Right. Like jumping out of an airplane with a parachute versus jumping out of an airplane without a parachute. Right? Is that what you
well,
mean?
If, no,
no,
so like
not
divorce your husband and go on your own versus jumping out of an airplane skydiving, like a physical fear like that.
Yeah.
Which is was my question.
No, right. There's no difference. It's the same thing. Fear is just fear.
Because it affects me in a different way. I feel a major difference between the two fears.
Right. Like jumping off of a cliff is fun, right? Leaving your husband, not so much fun. Oh, well, it depends, right? I think that there's certain areas where we're more able and willing to merge with our fear, like if we're doing a sport like mountain biking or something like that, or if you're on a water slide, right? It feels different than giving a speech. Going on a roller coaster, giving a speech feels very different, doesn't it? But one, you're embracing the fear, and the other, you're resisting it habitually. But there are people that love giving speeches, and they say they don't feel fear. They feel excitement, so that's fear. That's you know, it's all just a matter of, in many ways, personal preference. Like what's on the menu? You know, what of the 10 scary things that you could do today sounds the most appealing? Well, you know, something that is controlled like a roller coaster, you hope. for me, jumping off a cliff, you know, seems to be a lot more palatable than something that is imposed on you. You know, like getting mugged or something at gunpoint. So it's going to feel differently because you're going to perceive it differently and you're going to react to it differently. Does that answer the question?
Yes, that does. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, great. And the bottom line is fear is just fear. It's exactly the same sensation, no matter if it's roller coaster or speech or mugged at gunpoint, it's just a sensation of discomfort in your body. But when we start thinking about it and trying to understand it and resisting it and like thinking there's something wrong with us and all of that, that's when things get really weird and different and seem to all it just seems very, very different in different circumstances. But at the core, fear is just fear. It's just a sensation of discomfort in our bodies. So with that,
I guess with fear, it's like the courage to take action. So an example that comes is, okay, maybe you're scared to get on an airplane, but yet you have to travel to Bali. So you get on the airplane, and it's still fear, but you can work through that and breathe through that versus the courage it takes to divorce your husband, to step out in life on your own, analyzing that fear and what it is that you're fearful of in order to navigate through that life transition. So,
right. I feel
it's different.
I see courage as a willingness to feel fear. And in many ways, courage is a willingness to feel oftentimes the greater fear. Because let's take the plane, for example. There's fear of staying home and missing that opportunity. And let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, that's a 2, right? But there's a greater fear of getting on the plane. You know, let's say it's a 6. You get on the plane anyway. You have a willingness to do the scarier thing. Because there's fear if you do and there's fear if you don't. And it's the same with leaving your husband versus staying. Like there's fear if you stay stuck in that relationship and all that implies. You know, still there 10 years later, still miserable, like all of that. And then there's also fear if you go. You know, how am I going to make money? Who am I going to be? You know, how are people going to see me? What about the kids? It's like there's always fear if you stay, there's fear if you go. There's fear if you do, there's fear if you don't. You know, the question always is what is the greater fear? And if you embrace the greater fear, it always is going to require you to be courageous. And courage is a willingness to feel fear. That's what courage is. Any other questions? Okay. Well, I always end by putting my hands together and bowing to you. Because what we're doing here in these calls is we're engaging in consciousness practice. You know, becoming aware of our undercurrent, what our patterns are, all of that. And it's a scary thing to do. It takes courage to do. It's like, what are we going to find down here in our unconscious world, in our undercurrent, you know, that we're afraid may exist? So I put my hands together and I bow to you and say thank you for engaging in consciousness practice with me today. Not only does it affect your life, but it also affects my life. And we can't even begin to measure the impact that it has on the whole world. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. And I will talk to you all next week. And again, be sure to submit questions in advance. And we'll get to the questions that are submitted in advance first. And any leftover time, we'll have it be more of a free-for-all. And that's it. Good job, you guys.
Thank you so much, Kristen.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good night.
Bye.